Very good. Another talk, another day. And sometimes people think, oh, in a couple of days the retreat will be over. What do you mean, over? It keeps going on, and on, and on, and on, and on, and on. There's always another retreat next week. There's always another talk for me to give tomorrow. There's always another question to ask this morning, and again this afternoon, and again this evening. So what are we going to do about that? So one of the things which my life as a monk never turned out the way I expected it to. I thought I'd spend the rest of my life in a nice peaceful cave somewhere, not being bothered at all by anybody. And when I first came to Australia, I did do a little bit of research, and there's these very remote parts of Australia, and one of those is the Nullarbor Plain between Perth and Adelaide. And they call it Nullarbor because there's no trees on it, or very few trees. But there is a roadhouse or two there, and under the roadhouse there are lots of caves, underground caves, with plentiful supplies of fresh water. And I thought, great, that's what I would do. I would get a credit account at the local roadhouse. And I would stay under the cave, in the caves, enough water, calm and peaceful, and just go on alms round maybe once every 3 days. That's all you needed when you weren't doing any work. And just stay underground and just have the nice water there and meditate and meditate. And I thought, wow, that would be a really good idea. But then I started to contemplate. You know what would happen? Because you have to go out to get some food, and then people in the roadhouse, they would sort of get to know about me. And then the people travelling through, they would also find out that there's this hermit in the cave in the Nullarbor. And sooner or later, the next possible thing was nothing against the Japanese, but there'll be tours from Japanese, big buses coming past, wanting to have a photograph with the Hermit Nullarbor. Because when in tourists, you've been to so many places before, you know, you've seen the White House from a distance, you know, you've seen sort of Mount Everest, you've seen all these other places. So where can you go now? See the Hermit of the Nullarbor. So they'd wait for me to come out and they'd picture me, and then of course there'd be so many people that the local roadhouse would realize that this is a good economic opportunity. So they would actually probably run little bus tours from the roadhouse, you know, on the dirt roads, to the entrance to my cave, and so that people could actually go inside. They don't have to wait and see the Hermit of the Nullarbor. And then they figure out that, well, you know, for the convenience of people, you do need a toilet outside somewhere, you know, for all the guests. And of course, you need someone to look after the toilet as well. And the next thing which will happen, that they would build a little gift stall outside, a tourist. You know, with, I visited the Hermit of the Nullarbor. And a little sort of, you know, in the back, a little model, a little toy, the Nullarbor. And then, of course, you know, the news would come and find out about it, and whether it's the ABC or CNN or something, they would do a documentary about the Hermit of the Nullarbor. And they would also want to find out, what made you leave the world and become a hermit in the Nullarbor? Was it sort of a broken heart? Say, no, I just wanted some peace and quiet. No comment, it was, wasn't it? Because that's a few times people have asked me, why did you become a monk, Ajahn Brahm? And you know, I say all sorts of real reasons. You know, I like my meditation, you know, just I enjoy being a monk. But they say, no, come on, Ajahn Brahm. You became a monk to forget. You were rejected in love. Your one chance of true happiness was gone. And you decided to leave the world because of a broken heart. You became a monk to forget, didn't you? Say, no! See, that proves the point. You did forget. It's logically consistent. Because people like their dreams and their fantasies. So anyway, they'll have an in-depth interview. And every now and again, if I said anything wise, and have all these dreams of people, Ajahn Brahm, can you give me some advice? Not Ajahn Brahm, Hermit of the Nullarbor. And I become so busy, you know, just looking after all the visitors and having a photograph taken and giving advice and signing little, I visited the Hermit of the Nullarbor and when being interviewed by and have my weekly radio slot, you know, just advice column from the Hermit of the Nullarbor. And whenever there's an election sometimes, Hermit of the Nullarbor, who do you think is going to win the Melbourne Cup? Because, you know, hermits are supposed to have good... And this is the thing when you get into plans and fantasies. I took it to the limit. And I thought, my goodness me, that if I become a Hermit of the Nullarbor, I'll really be busy. So instead of trying to control and manipulate your life, where did this all start? This all started with, in a nice monastery in the north of Thailand, in Ampaphang province. And it was Waisak Day. So that Waisak Day, lots of people came to the monastery. And when they came to the monastery, they were listening to the head monk who was giving the talk. And you know, he wasn't that good a preacher. So that's an old story about even this little kid who went to church one Sunday. And sort of, even though he didn't have much pocket money, he gave it all to the pastor, the priest. And the priest would say, wow, you're so generous. Why are you giving me all your pocket money? Well, my daddy said you're a very, very poor preacher. So I thought you deserved this more than I did. But this fellow wasn't that sort of... But anyway, so what happened? All these people, instead of actually listening to the sermon, they saw me, Western monk, and they just came up to ask me questions. I could speak Thai well enough then, and I didn't mind. I thought I'd have a Dhamma discussion. I'd talk about meditation or dependent origination or the Four Noble Truths, something really interesting. But you know what they asked me? What does your mother and father do? What country have you come from? How many brothers and sisters have you got? And that was about the end of it. And after about 50 times being asked the same question, you know, where do you come from? You know, what does your mother and father do? How many brothers and sisters have you got? You know, you get a bit sort of fed up. So I used a usual trick in those days. I said, I need to go to the toilet. Even monks have to go to the toilet. So I went off to the toilet, and then when I left the toilet, I went around the back way and into my hut, quickly got a flashlight, water, and my cup, and a cushion, and then I went into one of the caves, one of the deepest caves in that monastery. Right to the very end of it, you know, went up this way, that way, around and all over. Even though it was a deep cave, the air was fine. It was a limestone cave. And so when I got to the very end, it was nice and sandy and cool and quiet. And I put my little, it was like a mat, not a cushion. And then my water, flashlight, turned the flashlight off and started meditating. I'd escaped. So there I was sitting there, nice and peaceful, for about 10 minutes. And then I heard something was actually in the cave as well. And as I listened, it wasn't an animal. It was a group of villagers. I found out later on they'd got so bored with the sermon, they couldn't find the Western monk, so they decided to explore the caves. And now they're exploring my cave. And then I opened my eyes and I could see just, they had one of these hurricane lamps, you know, from kerosene. And then I could see the light get brighter and brighter on the corner. as I approached closer and closer. And I had one chance, only one chance, and it almost worked. As what the first of the villagers, they turned the corner, they had the hurricane lamp, and they immediately just, they were surprised what they saw at the end of the cave. It was the very end of the cave, that's where I was sitting. And I heard them speak, "Let's get out of here." And I said, "Why?" "There's a ghost at the end of the cave." "Yes, yes." Because Thais are terrified of ghosts. "There's a ghost at the end of the cave, yes." I said, "Get out of here, come on." And I thought of actually going, "Ooh, ooh." But I wasn't so culturally attuned enough to know whether they guessed that was a Western monk trying to be a Thai ghost. So anyway, I just kept quiet. And then the next thing, two heads came around. His friend just wanted to have a seat, very quickly. They knew I was a long way away, the ghost was a long way away, so they could run out. And as soon as they both looked, then they went back again. "See, there's a ghost there." I said, "No, it's not the ghost, it's the Western monk." "No, it's the ghost. Let's get out of here." "No, it's the Western monk." And they had a discussion. And again, I was using all of my powers. "Please believe it's a ghost. It's a ghost, it's not Western monk." And then they agreed it was a Western monk. Me. So they all came up, a dozen of them came up. And they sat right in front of me. And they said, "Where are you from? How many brothers and sisters have you got?" Have you ever noticed that the more you try and escape, control the world, make it just the way you want it, it always goes wrong? So now I reconcile myself. There's no way I'm going to be a hermit of the Nullarbor. There's no way that I'm going to find a nice cave and get inside it. I've got a cave now. I've actually got one. There's more people go in that cave than go in the meditation hall in the Bodhidharma Monastery. Have you been to my cave yet? Yeah. The only monk whose cave was a tourist attraction. But it'd be even worse if that was the hermit of the Nullarbor. So what I learned from that is sometimes controlling stuff, that is not the way to be free. And the classic story of it was when one of our monks went to prison to teach. I mean, not for other things, but he went there to teach. And when he was teaching there, the prisoners, you know, they're all Australian, and they were just interested. You know, why? Why are you a monk? And what do Buddhist monks do in their monastery? How do they live? Because they were legitimately interested. And so when he started telling them about the day of a monk, you know, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, at that, they were stunned. "You get up at 4 o'clock in the morning? What did you do wrong to have to get up so early?" Because even in prison, you don't have to get up till 6 or 5:30, I don't know. And monks have to get up earlier. And of course, that's when he told them that getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning in Bodhidharma Monastery is optional. You can always get up earlier if you want to. But no later. Yeah, and then they asked, "What do you do after 4 o'clock in the morning? Can you just watch the late night movie?" I said, "No, we don't have TVs in monastery." You know, there's people have offered us TVs. There's this gentleman. I just can't understand the lay world. I'm sorry, but I just don't get it. He just came to Bodhidharma Monastery once. He had a big TV. He said, "Oh, can I give you this TV to your monastery?" I said, "Well, you know, we don't need a TV." He said, "And is it some old one or something?" He said, "Oh, no, it's brand new. I just bought it this morning." "You mean you bought it in this morning and you want to give it to us?" "Yeah," he said. "Well, why did you buy it if you don't need it?" He said, "Because it was on sale." I won't tell you who he is, but, you know, he always goes to Dhammaloka. He's, you know, one of the volunteers there. And he bought a TV for the one reason it was on sale. Not that he needed it. Nobody wanted one. So he had an extra TV, which he bought because it was on sale, and he wanted to give it to somebody. So I don't know whatever happened to it, but we didn't get it anyway, thank goodness. But he said to, you know, that sometimes when I go traveling, sometimes I get put up in hotels. Do you think I watch the TV when I'm in a hotel? I do watch the TV. It's fascinating. I go, actually, I don't know if the new ones do this, but the old ones, I go right close to it. I watch the TV. You know what happens when you see the TV? I see my reflection in the glass at the front. I don't turn it on, but I watch the TV. It's much more interesting. You see your own self looking there. Wow. That is deep. So no, we don't have TVs in monastery. So then what do you do? In the morning, meditate. Oh yeah, okay, chanting, whatever. Then we have our breakfast, I say over there, just not like the ones we have over here. Just one cup full of three Weetabix, some milk, maybe a banana, and a cup of tea. So that's all you get? Yeah. Wow, he said, in Australian prisons, you can have whatever you want. You can have pancakes with the best maple syrup. You can have vegetarian, vegan, bacon and eggs, steak, whatever you want. Now, every type of cereal in the world, you know, because I have to have cereals in prison. You know why? Because there's a few serial killers in there. You know that was coming, that was a bad joke. Serial killers have to eat cornflakes. And then, he said, whatever you want. He said, that's terrible in your monastery, just little stuff. What do you do after lunch? And then you see the monks work. And some of that work is really hard physical labor. And I've done my share of hard physical labor. And they said, whoa. You know, in prisons, they go on strike if they have to work too hard. And it's also they have occupational health and safety. And known a few prisons over there, they can't change a light bulb. They can't do what Christina or Scotty does. They can't climb up that ladder, you know, to adjust the video camera, because you actually need a license to work at heights. You do. Anything over about three steps, you need a special sort of license working at heights. I don't think I could even actually get permission to actually to step up here. I think some of you know the occupational health and safety. There's a reason for it, but sometimes it goes a bit too far. So as for me, again, the last time I worked here, the last time I'm going to tell you that I worked here in China Grove was when, you know, I was fixing the roof just behind the teacher's cottage. There was a leak, so I was up there fixing it and just up on the roof, and that's where the previous caretakers, they took a video of me and posted it on YouTube of me working. They thought, it shows even a monk, you know, Ajahn Brahm still gets up there and helps out and works. But I got all this complaints back. Ajahn Brahm, you're too valuable to work up there. You know, because number one, if you slipped, you know, you might injure yourself and we lose our teacher. More likely that have you tested that those rafters are strong enough to, to support you. And I told them that, look, this is the whole purpose of having this, I call it a cushion. So if I fall over, you know, I don't even hit my nose. The belly gets in the way first of all, and it bounces back up again. But don't try and prove it. Say my word for it. But no, so anyway, but you know, the monks do work hard here. We're not lazy at all. So anyway, what happens? Well, as they said, wow, that's really sort of hard. It won't get us to work hard like you do. You know, we enjoy it sometimes. You know, it's contributing. I mentioned this this piece of floor there was done by the monks until 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, the day before the opening ceremony. So anyway, and many of those, for those of you who go to Bodhinyana Hall, I mean, this I really went a bit too far on this one, because Bodhinyana Hall over there, you know who the builder is? Whose name is on the building license? I was the official builder there. And when it got to the gables, you know, the brick wall, there was no roof on, no rafters, just this brick wall going up to a peak, really high, it's about 4 or 5 meters. We needed a couple of more bricks on top there, on which we were going to get a crane to put the beams, the rafters. And we needed a few more bricks. There was no scaffold. So there was stupid Ajahn Brahm with a bucket of cement in one hand, a bucket of bricks on the other, just walking up, just on the side. Number one, just those bricks, because it was two leaves of bricks, but still they weren't that stable. Very could easily break. And just balancing myself up, crouching, just laying the last bricks. And some people say, Ajahn Brahm, that was really stupid. For those of little faith. But we did do those things because, you know, well, it has to be done. A bit of sacrifice, a bit of giving. And of course, I never fell off, obviously. That's why they always say, when I used to go into the jungles of Thailand, they said, don't have to worry about tigers, because monks never get eaten by tigers. He said, there's no record of a monk ever being eaten by a tiger in the jungles of Thailand. And I replied, yes, there wouldn't, would there? The tiger wouldn't confess. He wouldn't know about it. And okay, the old joke is coming. Because I don't know any monks who got eaten by tigers, but I know many monks who got eaten by Thai girl. They were the dangerous ones. Anyway, where was I? Oh yeah, I was in prison, talking to these prisoners, or the other guy was, and said, work very hard, but what do you have for lunch? And he always has in the same bowl, one bowl. And it's true that sometimes you do get really interesting combinations in your bowl. And I have had, what was it? I had strawberry ice cream on lasagna. Strawberry ice cream. It just, you know, we're putting it in there, but it's tipped over onto the lasagna. All in the same bowl. It doesn't matter because it all gets mixed up inside, you just mix it up beforehand. Have you ever had strawberry ice cream on lasagna? You haven't? Put it on your bucket list. What are the things to do before you die? It was disgusting. I wouldn't recommend it. And, oh, that's disgusting, yucky. They, apparently, even in solitary confinement, when they put the meal, you know, inside the little opening to feed you inside, they actually have different compartments. You know, one for the rice or the potatoes or whatever you're having, and one for the main course and one for your fruit or dessert or whatever. They have separate compartments. They're not monks. So anyway, they said, well, what do you do after lunch? And they said, do you play soccer? Or you play football or tennis? And that's when they said, no, we don't play sport. And there's a reason why Buddhists don't play sport. Imagine if they did. Imagine we started a Jhana Grove soccer team. There's enough of you here. A bit of exercise in the afternoon. So a soccer team, what would happen? And suppose who can we actually play? The Ajahn Brahm disciples play the Vipassana disciples in soccer. Now, but if it was my disciples, we just calm, be peaceful, and as soon as you get the ball, let go. Let the other side take it. And the Vipassana, as soon as they're about to shoot, shooting, 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 shooting. They never kicked the ball. So, please, Buddhists, don't play soccer. It's one of the reasons. Why is it? Have you ever seen a Buddhist country ever get to the finals of the World Cup soccer? Thailand? How many times has Thailand been in the World Cup? Zero. Never got there. Burma? No. Bhutan, Tibet? No. There's a good reason why. Because we're compassionate and kind. Always let the other team win. It's kindness, bodhisattva, let go. You don't want to disturb other people and disappoint them. If they want to win, you win. So we don't play soccer at all. We don't play competitive sports. Actually, we do play one competitive sport. You've seen me here. It's called running. Sometimes you're trying to open the door for me, and I run as well and see if I can get to the door before you would open it up. That's my main exercise. But, so you don't. What do you do in the afternoon? Meditate? Okay. And then maybe study? Okay. Do some work? Okay. But then, what about dinner? What time do you have dinner? What do you have for dinner, monks? Dinner? We don't have dinner. We finish our meals at lunchtime. What? You don't have dinner? That's cruel and unusual punishment. That's against the human rights. You have to have dinner. So we don't. I said, well, they look at me and say, well, you know, it doesn't do you any harm. It's one of the reasons I don't take dinner, because if I did, imagine what I would look like, be out here somewhere. So, anyway, no dinner. So what do you do in the evening? You know, you can't watch TV, you can't sort of have dinner. Do you play cards? Of course we don't. Because if we played cards, it wouldn't be that hard for senior monks to actually see on the other side of the card. Use your x-ray vision. Oh, you've got two aces there. I've got three kings. It'd be cheating, wouldn't it? No, we don't play cards. What do you do there? We meditate. Ooh. And I remember the monk who told me this story, they did actually ask him, said, don't you get tired of meditating? Yeah, sometimes, he said. You've got to be honest. So what time do you go to bed? Bed? We don't have beds. We sleep on the floor. Why do you sleep on the floor? Because that means I can roll whichever way I want and I never fall out of bed. You know, actually, apparently that was... I think in a news article someone sent me that they were commenting about all the shark attacks in Australia. And they said more people in Australia die by falling out of bed and getting hitting themselves, injuring themselves, than they do by being eaten by sharks. That's one of the reasons why I don't have to worry about that, because I only roll, I never fall out, because I sleep on the floor. You sit in the cushion, so you just roll, and you're safe. So be careful, you know, and sleeping in bed, oh, don't know, it's very dangerous for your health. So now we sleep, oh, crikey, they said. But anyway, after telling them the day in the life of a monk, you know, it always changes this way and that way, the prisoners were so surprised. And this is the reason I remember this story, but it actually happens. Sometimes I tell jokes, I make up jokes, but nothing can be as funny as real life. Because one of the prisoners looked at their friend, the monk, and realized how ascetic their life was, and said, that's terrible where you live. Why don't you come in here and stay with us instead? And they meant it before... Everyone cracked up laughing and realized what he just said. He'd invited the monk to go and stay in jail. So they felt sorry for him in the monastery. But, as you also know, there is huge waiting lists in this place, in the nuns' monastery. Our monasteries are just chock-a-block. coming here, living pretty much a monk's lifestyle. There's a big waiting list trying to get in here to get on a retreat. It's not easy to get in this retreat. Why? The reason is that the only difference between here and in the prison is that because people want to be here. It doesn't matter how comfortable, how ascetic it is. If you want to be here, you're free. If you want to be somewhere else, doesn't matter how comfortable it is in prison, then you're in prison. And when I heard that and figured that out, that was a great insight about how many times we make prisons of our life. There I was in that beautiful monastery in the north of Thailand, and I didn't want to be there. I didn't want to hear these people ask these stupid questions again and again and again and again. I now made a prison for myself. I remember in one time, it was this big conference over in Japan, and they put me in, it was a 6-star hotel. Had a jacuzzi. I was terrified of it. I just wanted a shower. And just, I was afraid of pressing a button. Don't know what might happen. Press the wrong one, you get sucked through one of these things and never come out again. I don't know what to do. There was instructions on it, but the instructions were in Japanese. I had one of the I just wanted to go to the toilet. And where do you flush it? And you press something and this hot air came in your bottom. But actually, I must admit, I have to be honest, I really got into that because I pressed all the buttons. Now the first time you see one of these toys, I'm a monk, okay, you don't have much fun in life. You don't have many toys to play with. So I got off the seat and pressed this button. How far did it go? Monks are just kids who haven't grown up. Anyway, no, more than that. But anyway, what else did they have? That TV in every room, we didn't want to know how to switch on. Oh, the minibar. Wow, really expensive stuff in that minibar. Couldn't take any of that. And I was sitting there and just, all this stuff here. And I looked through the window and there's this beautiful little garden there, a forest. And that's where I wanted to be, in the forest in simplicity. But I had to stay inside the room because they were going to pick me up in half an hour. And so I thought, I don't want to be here. I want to be in the freedom of a forest, I thought. None of these sort of artificial enjoyments. And I just started wondering, here I was in a 6-star hotel, and I just made a prison out of it because I didn't want to be there. How many of you are going to beautiful places, but you're actually in prison? You want to be somewhere else? And this became my understanding, whatever your lifestyle is, if you're in the hermit of the Nullarbor, if you're here having a photograph taken, I still don't understand why people want to take photographs of me. When I was young, fit and handsome, no one wanted to take a photograph of me. Now I'm fat and old, people want to take photographs. And be careful of the flash photographs as well. Because when the last time I went to Java, to Borobudur, there was a big sign up, please, no flash photographs. And the reason why was because so many tourists taking flash photographs of the great monument Borobudur in the middle of Java, that it was actually degrading the stone. It was having an effect on the stone, and the stone was actually crumbling because of the flash photographs. So I'd say the same to you, be careful, because this face is beginning to crumble now. To degrade because of all. It's going to degrade anyway, so get it over and done with. But anyway, sometimes I caught myself many times thinking, I'm a monk. Why are people taking photographs of me? That's not what I became a monk for. To sign books, have photographs taken. I'm supposed to let go of all that sort of stuff. But I was there in Yogyakarta, I think, or Medan or somewhere, this big line of people wanting their photograph taken and signing a book. Sign the book, photo, sign book, photo. And I just, after 1 hour of that, you know, and there's still a long queue. I wanted to go to the toilet, I had enough. What are you doing this for? And I had this 1 minute of ill will, not happy. And then I caught myself, hey, I'm now in prison, doing something which I don't want, being in a place I don't like, doing things I think I shouldn't be doing. But I looked at all the people there, there's no escape. I couldn't change where I was. So what did I do? Changed my attitude. Wanting to be here. And as soon as I wanted to be here, there was no suffering anymore. And I could sign the books and smile, sign the books and smile, sign the books and smile. I've had a lot of training in this now. That's why when people get their photographs out, comes out, smile, and play around, have a good time. Signing the books, you see me signing the books. So, you know, it's not just Ajahn Brahm's signature. I put the happy face on the Ajahn Brahm. You know, those of you, I've got to be careful there because the signature on the books, I always put the happy face on it. But then the problem came once when I was really busy, so I just signed it, and it was like the immigration form. And I said, that is not how you're supposed to sign an immigration form. This is serious, a legal document, Ajahn Brahm. Okay, give it back and sign it again. You're not supposed to put a smiley face when you're sort of applying for a passport or whatever. So what's this to do with meditation? Is it just anecdotes? Well, you're here right now, listening to me. Do you want to be here? Are you waiting for this to be finished so you can do real meditation? Or are you waiting for this to be finished so you can go to the toilet, have a cup of tea or whatever? If you have, you've just created tension, tightness, you're in a prison. You created a prison for yourself. So instead, I want to be here. I want to be here listening to this silly old monk tell these old stories which you can read in the book. You've heard the jokes many, many times before. Do you really want to be here? If you want to be here, you're free. There comes a time when you're sick. You're lying in your bed, my meditation retreat. Why can't I get sick when I'm at work and take time off? I sacrifice so much to come to this retreat center, and I'm just about to get enlightened and I get sick. It's unfair. So instead you say, no, I'm sick, I want to be here. And if you want to be here, no matter what your physical situation is, emotional situation, life circumstances, if you want to be here right now, wherever you are free. It doesn't matter whether it's hot or cold, whether you've got energy or whether you're tired, when people like you or they don't like you, whether you are in the best meditation center in the whole world or the worst, whether your meditation is really restless all over the place, haven't had a moment of peace, are you happy being here? If you are, you're free. If you want to be somewhere else, you're in prison. That's the difference between freedom and prison, between liberation and being entangled in attachments. So easy to be free. When you're meditating today, remember this. You catch yourself, do I want to be here or do you want to be in jhanas? You are now created a prison and stopping the freedom. You'll never get jhanas that way. If you're really dull, really tired, do you want to be here or do you want to be somewhere else? If you want to be here, the body straightens up by itself. Peace, stillness. You're content. What's wrong with dullness? As I keep on saying, it's not against the precepts. What's wrong with restlessness? Who knows, sometimes people say, have these really nightmarish dreams all over the place. Please, if that happens to you, you have these really weird and strange dreams, please take a notebook with you to bed and write it down in the morning and send it to DreamWorks, Steven Spielberg, or who's the other? Right, I don't know, the other producers. Anyway, film producers, the ones who do terror movies or horror movies. I would have said Alfred Hitchcock, but he's dead a long time ago. But, you know, is there a script there? There's a script which no one's done before. You know, the crazy, you know, I remember years and years ago I had this amazing dream. This is what monks dream about. It's a really cool dream. I was having a psychic battle with a Hindu saint. That was really good fun because I remember it. And just, you're flying through the air, zap! And he was zapping you and you were zapping back and zapping back and zapping through the air. That was really good fun. And that was years ago, way before Harry Potter or vampires and stuff like that. And wow, that was really cool. Zapping all over the place. But of course, it was my dream, so I won. Have you ever found in your fantasies, in your dream, you're always the winner? You never lose. Do you? So anyway, if you want to be here, then you're free. So you're meditating, sitting down, and you don't feel good, you don't feel this, you feel that. How about just trying? Here I am. I want to be here. And then see what happens. If there's wonderful peace and freedom and being at ease. It's one of the things which I ask people. When you remember you use the past, okay, breaking my usual idea of always letting go of the past. But the times in your life so far, in all your years, when have you been the most peaceful? The most happy, the ones you remember the most as being this was a beautiful, peaceful, happy moment. And I think a lot of times what you remember is the most peaceful moment you've ever experienced, the one which stands out, the happiest. You weren't rich, you weren't in amazing health, you didn't just get this incredible prize which everybody was cheering for you. It was you're with either alone or with other people, but the people you liked, and in that moment you didn't want to be anywhere else in the whole world, except maybe, you know, with a lover, with a good friend, or with a dog. You didn't want to be anywhere else in the whole world. It wasn't some exotic resort or some six-star hotel, just maybe simple by the beach, or just in a forest somewhere, or even just in a city, in a park. You're sitting there and you don't want to be anywhere else in the whole world except just here with the people around you. You know, in that financial situation, that health or lack of health, in that sort of temperature. And moments like that, I call them the taste of freedom. You look around afterwards and think, I didn't have much there. I didn't just have this huge check, which I just won the lottery. I didn't sort of have beautiful people around me. I didn't have the most exotic landscape gardens. But I was happy and content. What it's telling you, you don't need to have perfection around you. You don't need to have all the very best to be free and happy. Looking around you, there's no other place I'd rather be. Look at this jhana growth. Sometimes, you know, and I encourage people, just get a chair, sit in the afternoon sunshine, or so a few people in the morning. The sun came out, and they're just sitting having a cup of tea, or just sitting back and just enjoying the sunshine. Not much, but you were happy and content. And in that moment, didn't want anything else in the whole world, just to be here. Taste of freedom, why was that happy? Why, it was not the best, you may be still hungry, still you hadn't jhana yet, not enlightened or anything like that, but you were at peace. This is where we get the insight from. Why were you at peace? Because you were content, you didn't want anything. This was good enough for me. Happy to be here. So, you've got a few more days of just simple retreats. When you're encouraged, you can be. You don't have to attain things. Happy to be here. A few days, unfortunately, that you'll be off back to work, back to your homes, and people will be demanding you to do this, produce that, clean this. Oh, it's endless. But at least here, you sit down, take time out, and realize you don't need that much to be happy, to be content. Sitting here, a nice cup of tea, not the best seat in the world, but it's good enough. Not the best temperature in the world, but it's good enough. Not the best forest in the planet, but it's good enough. Just enjoying the wind brushing past your skin. Where the wind comes from, no one knows. Where the wind goes, you cannot follow it. You just feel the wind. With every nerve in your skin as it passes right now. And that's all you can do. That is our life. Making peace and enjoying every moment. It's amazing where you can find enjoyment and peace. Sadhu. 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 Very good. Excellent. Sorry?
I'm doing Brahms yoga.
Yoga. Okay, yeah. Very good. So have a nice morning. Some interviews, as usual.